from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Diocese of Oakland this week published the names of 45 priests, deacons, and religious brothers who have been credibly accused of the sexual abuse of minors. This comes as the Vatican prepares for a summit on clergy sexual abuse, which will include the Pope and presidents of the world's bishops' conferences. And we're going to discuss the scandal and how the Church is responding. Joining us is Kimberly Winston. She's a freelance religion reporter whose work has appeared in the Washington Post, USA Today, and more. And welcome, Kimberly Winston. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
We're also going to welcome our own Chloe Veltman, who's here in studio, KQED reporter. Welcome, Chloe.
Hello, Michael.
Hello to you. And Kimberly Winston, let me go to you first here, and let's talk about what's going on, particularly not only in Oakland, but really throughout the country. We've got publication of 45 names in Oakland, as I said, and there are dioceses in San Jose that have done publications of names in San Diego, in Stockton. They're still waiting in San Francisco to decide what to do. But in Oakland, they go all the way back to 1962, and the most current one is 1988. And one has to wonder why this list stops at 1988.
Yeah, and there's also criticism coming out about the fact that the list was just released on Monday. There's already 70 different dioceses and religious orders that have beat Oakland to the punch, publishing lists of their own priests who have been accused, in the language of the Church, credibly accused of sexual misconduct with minors. And it's coming out the same week as the Vatican meeting that starts tomorrow, the four-day meeting about clergy sex abuse and bishop accountability. It's like they just got it in, under the wire. There is no official deadline, but it's, it just looks like that.
Well, it's been criticized. I should mention Dan McNevin, who we had on here, who's from a survivors group. He was abused as an altar boy, in fact, said, why did they wait so long? And I think that's a pertinent question. But they've also got people after 1988. There's, in fact, an investigation that's been going on that you may know about a priest who's from Costa Rica originally, who has come under monitoring in terms of his behavior, and they're waiting to see if he's actually proven to be guilty before his name goes on this list. But what do these lists do, actually? I mean, they're trying to say we're transparent, I guess, aren't they?
They're trying to say we're transparent. The lists are also a way, there's a lot of good reasons for publishing this list, right? I mean, we publish the names of known sex offenders so you can know who's in your community. You want to know if one of these priests is in your local parish or your child or has, been at a camp with your child. You want to know.
But forgive me, Kimberly, many of them are not priests anymore and many of them are deceased.
Correct. But you want to know if your parish has ever been involved in this. But I think the most important thing, one of the most important things about publishing the list is that it's a way of acknowledging to the survivors, we hear you. Is it enough is another question, but it is a way of acknowledging that this is real, this happened, the Church hears you, and the Church is being public about it.
Well, we're going to talk more about what's going on with the Vatican Summit with you, but Chloe Veltman's here, and she actually attended a Berkeley panel discussion of the Catholic sexual abuse scandal last night. What'd you hear, Chloe?
It was a really interesting event, Michael, about 100 people present. And what I heard really foremost was a lot of questions, a lot of throwing arms up into the air and going, what's happening and what do we do now? In an attempt to try and sort through the many issues that around this sexual abuse problem. And of course, it's not just looking at child abuse, it's also looking at the abuse of nuns, which is another thing that surfaced.
Was this convened because of the Oakland Diocese news?
No, it was not. It was basically, how shall I say, in the air, this whole topic being so much in the air right now. And yes, there's the meeting happening at the Vatican this week, which was one reason why they decided to do this now. But it was really a call from the Jesuit school to sort of look at how can we, as a theology center in the Jesuit and Catholic tradition, best respond to the needs of the Church at this time? That was the sort of overarching question, of which really at this point they don't really have any answers.
So there are more questions than answers, and questions also, And we'll get to this with you, Kimberly Winston, about what's going to be accomplished in this Vatican summit. There's a good deal of skepticism. And in fact, I was just looking at two prominent Roman Catholic cardinals who have urged an end to what they call the plague of the homosexual agenda, telling bishops to break their complicity over cases of sexual abuse. There seems to be a battle going on within the church. These are two cardinals who are very critical of Pope Francis, and they're essentially saying that the Pope is maybe letting homosexual concerns go out the window here when they should be primary.
Yeah, you know, in regards to the meeting, it's only a three-day meeting, right? This has been going on for decades. I'm sure it's been going on longer. But in 3 days, what can they accomplish? And so you're not to expect there's going to be a quick fix. Or it's not a quick fix because this has been a major story in almost the entire 25 years of my career covering religion. It shows no signs of going away. But they're going to make sure that the bishops, the archbishops, and cardinals who come in for this meeting know that they are responsible for clergy sex abuse that goes on in their home areas, and that they will be held accountable. And then, you know, late last week, Friday, they laicized or defrocked Cardinal McCarrick, a U.S. cardinal, for, among other things, soliciting sex in the confessional. And that's a big sign. He's the highest-ranking church official to have this happen to him. And that is a red flag going into this meeting that the church means business.
This was after he was given sanctuary in the Vatican. And I'm wondering, didn't you talk to a priest who said that being defrocking was worse than anything he could endure, Theodore McCarrick? He could have gone to jail, but that seems to be...
Exactly. I heard that in the commentary yesterday. One priest was saying this is the worst punishment that... could happen to McCarrick. He's been defrocked. You know, he can no longer perform the sacraments of the church. And I thought, well, you know, actually, I think there are a lot of survivors out there who think really the worst thing that could happen to him is to go to jail. But of course, the statute of limitations on many of these crimes, not only McCarrick's but many others, has expired.
Kimberly Winston with us again, freelance religion reporter who contributes to the Washington Post and USA Today, and Chloe Veltman here in studio, who's a reporter with KQED News. So you got some tape from last night. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I'm speaking to this issue of leaders, the higher leaders in the church, not being exposed in the same way as the regular priests is a really important issue that's going to come up in this meeting in at the Vatican this week. And Bishop Oscar Cantu of San Jose, who spoke last night, says that what he really hopes that will come out of the meeting in Rome this week are some clear protocols for accountability of these bishops and higher ups.
That there will be clear protocols for accountability. Bishops, that when a bishop is accused of direct abuse or of mismanagement, that it is dealt with in a way that is swift, in a way that is transparent, in a way that is accountable.
Sounds good, and yet we've heard it before, haven't we?
Exactly.
We have, yeah. I mean, obviously, this is a problem that's been going on and on and on. And it seems like the church sort of, when something comes out, like the Boston Globe investigation in 2002, there's a big reaction from the church. And now there seems to be a big groundswell.
Even more
again.
Recently in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, it's almost like Groundhog's Day in a sense. But there is more expectation with this new Vatican summit because Francis is, as you said, Kimberly Winston, he's laicized Theodore McCarrick. That seems to be, in many people's minds, a major move in the right direction.
It is. I think it is. I think that many survivors...
I'm sorry, we're going to have to get you on another line here, Kimberly. Suddenly your call is breaking up. But while we get you on another line, let me give out the phone number and let me invite you, our listeners, to join this conversation talking about the Oakland Diocese releasing the list of 45 clergymen credibly accused of sexual abuse and the Vatican Summit, which is coming up. And you may want to comment. You may want to bring questions into the fore here. The way to join us, Toll-free number, 866-733-6786, and we welcome your calls and welcome your involvement in the program. So please feel free to join us now. The number again is 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at kqedforum. Number of ways you could be part of the program, and looking at a comment from William who says, what years does the list include? And I mentioned this list in Oakland goes back to 1962, and there's nothing since 1988 on it. Nigel writes, the decision to prevent priests from getting married has been a huge mistake with terrible consequences, so why is the Vatican always doubled down on it? Any thoughts on this from you, Chloe Veltman?
You know,
did it come up last night, marriage of priests at all?
Yeah, it didn't, actually. No, I mean, it didn't come up very much at all. But, I mean, there was a lot of talk about how to educate priests, how to make them better equipped to be able to deal with abuse cases as they come up, to not even think about going there themselves. One question that came up was, you know, why are not more women involved in the formation of seminarians, in sort of helping to train people who go on to be leaders in the church? And it's funny to hear how much discrepancy there was in that globally, because I mean, this is the wonderful thing about last night's meeting, was it was rather global in nature. You not only did we have the Bishop of San Jose and a professor from the from Santa Clara University, but there was also Bina Kaleli, who's this Indian nun, and Vivian Nabule, who is a Ugandan chaplain. But anyway, it was interesting to hear, you know, someone like Cantu in San Jose saying, oh, over the 9 years of his training, he interfaced with women a lot. There were women in his parishes, and there were women professors. But in India, for example, Bina Kaleli said that was not the case for her at all.
I was in an Indian seminary context for 3 years, and I have seen only one lady professor for one day for a workshop.
Yeah, so, you know, she wasn't getting a whole lot of interface with women, even though she herself is a woman. And it's a real problem, I think, in terms of the training of the priests.
It's also a problem in terms of so much has been emphasized, because the majority of the kind of cases we're talking about involve young males and male priests, although there are a number of nuns who have been sexually abused and people in confession, as we heard about with McCarrick. This sort of thing keeps coming up. Was there an emphasis in this meeting about homosexuality or males or anything? There's no connection that we know of, certainly, between pedophilia and homosexuality, although that's been used by the homophobia of the church, I should add.
Right. Yeah. Again, I mean, this is something that didn't come up particularly at the meeting last night. I mean, perhaps because we're in the Bay Area and, you know, it's just not considered a problem here at all.
But you mentioned globally it is a big problem.
Well, I think globally, you know, perhaps more so, but even in terms of the African context and the Indian context we heard about last night, they didn't talk about that too much at all.
I'm going to go to our callers, and Kimberly Winston, let's test out your line here. It's good, I hope.
Yeah, it's good. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Let me go to some callers, and let's bring in our first caller, Janine. Join us. You're on the air.
Hi, Michael. Hi, everyone. I just think it's a very important topic, and being born and raised Catholic, I've really fallen away from the church for this reason, because I really believe that Catholics always said social justice is really important, and then to ignore this within the organization is really intolerable. And even though I'm spiritual and love the tradition of the church and, you know, still occasionally go, I really am against what's going on and really the secrecy and the, you know, the injustice of it all. So I'm really happy to hear this topic being discussed publicly. And if I could, I'd stand up in the middle of my church and kind of demand more justice. So thanks for having this talk, Michael.
Well, thank you for that call. I appreciate hearing from you and your kind words. And let me go back, if I may, to you, Kimberly Winston, mm-hmm. because in Ireland, for example, the church is just about cleared out now, and membership has gone way down as a result of Spotlight, the movie, and as a result of Pennsylvania and all of these scandals that have really hurt the church immensely and continue to hurt the church. And just wondering at this point what your thoughts are, since you've been covering it dutifully, in terms of membership. I mean, there's a caller, for example, who says, I love the ritual. I love Catholicism. It's my background. But I've fallen away, and lots of people have fallen away.
lots of people have fallen away. And I think that's one of the hopes that will come out of this meeting is can the meeting sort of restore, give people hope that this really will change, that the hierarchy of the church actually has the best interests of the parishioners at heart, not just, you know, covering up dirty laundry. But yes, I mean, I hear this a lot, especially across the United States. You know, I used to go, I don't go anymore. Can't stand the hypocrisy of, you know, the church condemns homosexuals as disordered, but it has in its ranks, you know, it protects in its ranks people who interfere with little children.
Aren't there estimates? I've seen estimates as high as 40 and even 70% of those in the priesthood being homosexual.
I've heard that, yes. I've heard, what was it? I read the other day that one father said a third are homosexual, a third are not, and the other third don't know what the hell they are.
Yeah. Well, let me bring some more callers aboard here. And again, Kimberly Winston is a freelance religion reporter, and Jake is joining us. Jake, you're on. Morning.
Hi. I wanted to know why law enforcement isn't being called both when there's an accusation, why it's the church that investigates and not the police, and secondly, when there's a cover-up, why this isn't considered a conspiracy.
Well, that's, again, a lot of the indignation that we have experienced as a backlash to these scandals. Kimberly Winston, you want to comment on that? I mean, the lack of prosecution and the lack of accountability, and not only that, but the covering up.
Sure. Well, you're seeing a lot more of law enforcement getting involved because since Boston in 2002, you know, that has been the official policy of the churches. It's not the official policy of the church, but that's part of the Dallas Charter, which was a document of how to handle with this, was you have to call law enforcement. So diocese parishes must call law enforcement. However, you do see, like, Oakland is being criticized in the current case. Reverend Alex Castillo, who's accused of some sort of sexual misconduct with a minor, that they didn't report it to law enforcement until after he'd already been placed on leave. And that gives, in the minds of some of the survivors and the critics of this, that gives him a chance to leave the country if he wants to. And that has happened before where accused priests have left the country.
Yeah, I alluded to this before. Reverend Castillo, they've said they'll add him to the list, though the diocese said it doesn't necessarily mean a crime was committed. You know about Chloe, you want to comment on this?
Yeah, I mean, I covered the case of Alex Castillo when it broke a little while ago. I mean, it was interesting, too, that you know, the Oakland Diocese said that they reported the case to the Oakland Police Department after the victim came forward. But, you know, when I contacted the police department, they rummaged around and at that time they said no report of the sexual assault allegation had been placed. So, yeah. You know, it's possible it got stuck in their system, but it's clear that, you know, there are some sort of a process or system problems with this whole business of reporting these cases.
Let me bring more callers on here, and let me go next to a caller in Oakland, and that's you, Hank. You're on the air. Good morning, Hank.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you, my brother was kicked out of St. Joseph's in Santa Clara for what they called transgressions when he was about 15. And about 10 years later, he ran into his father confessor on Castro Street. However, framing this as a gay issue denies the women who've been abused when they were younger, and puts the onus on just a certain group of priests and, you know, disavows or allows the other ones to get away with it. So can you answer that?
Want to comment, Kimberly Winston?
Yeah, there is a segment of folks within the church who see this as, quote, you know, a gay problem. They blame all of this on the secret cable of gay priests in the church. There has never been any study, any evidence that shows that gay men are more likely to commit child abuse than anyone else. It's a been debunked as, you know, bad science. But, you know, I think it, for some people, it's easier to point that finger than it is to point a finger that there are some serious problems with the churches, who becomes ordained, the psychology of the of folks in the church, and it's easier to point a finger at gay people, who, which the church already vilifies as being disordered. You know, the official church vilifies as being disordered. There are certainly parishes that, that are welcoming.
Yeah, I'm looking at a comment from a listener named Stephanie who writes, there is much discussion of the abuse of young boys, but what percentage of sexual abuse by priests is directed at girls and young women? Why the emphasis on homosexuality? I think it's a certainly reasonable question. And in fact, I've got a listener here, Caroline, who was a victim of sexual abuse. Caroline, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Okay, I'm going to try to get through this as best I can because I'm on the radio talking about this. I'll just be really open about my experience and maybe this will give some insight. I was assaulted when I was 9 during one of my first confessions. The priest encouraged us to do it face to face because he would know who we were anyway. So we might as well just sit in the room with him. I did penance after it happened and kind of suppressed it and dealt with it. Still went to the church my entire childhood and didn't really tell my family until I was about 25. They were very heavily involved in the church. Once I told my grandmother about it, she went to the church herself, tried to get me help, tried to contact the right people. The process is broken. I talked to the official at the Fresno Diocese, and this happened in Kern County. They sent me to the police. The police said that there was a statute of limitations and that there was nothing that they could do, and it was his word against mine. The church said that because it happened during Holy Confession, the priest was protected and didn't have to tell anybody what happened during confession, even if he did do something. I have emails. I've gone to lawyers. Nothing's happened.
I'm so sorry you went through all that. That's all I can say. But you've kept your spirit. I can hear it in your voice. And
I can, and I work a good job in tech. I have a good family now, so I got past it. But I'm a lucky one.
I'm glad to hear that. But I'm sorry, as I said, that you went through that. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate hearing from you. And here's Guillermo, who says, does only Catholic, Roman Catholic religion have this problem? What about other religions? Well, other religions do, especially the Orthodox Jews, who have had, you know, serious problems with abuse in those Chabad areas of New York. The difference is, though, and they often point to this, Kimberly Winston, that the priesthood involves celibacy, and you hear arguments from both sides. Well, it's not celibacy that's responsible for molestation or sexual abuse, and yet some say celibacy has to play a role in here. It has to be seen.
Well, I think you can, you know, this is just my personal opinion, but I wonder if it does exacerbate the problem. But you know, there are folks who hope that this crisis will bring the church to a point where it's willing to reconsider that. I think, you know, this church moves glacially. And if anybody's looking for in the next 3 days the church to decide, you know what, we're going to do away with celibacy, or even I think in my lifetime, I think that's not a good hope. But the church has some, I feel like the church has some, it needs to come into the real world. And, you know, they have special language. They have their own courts. They have their own, you know, things happen behind closed doors and behind walls. And they need to come more firmly into the here and now and see that, you know, people, human beings have drives and needs. We are all fallible. I'm sure the church knows that.
Yeah, but what you have here is, and I think you've just put your finger on it, is a culture of secrecy, and that's
exactly.
We got a number of callers that I'd like to get in here. Mike is next. Mike, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
So my name is Mike. I'm calling from San Jose.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you. So almost 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago, I was abused by a priest in Southern California. And listening to this show brought back many not unhappy feelings. But the vocabulary being used of dirty laundry when it's truly sexual abuse and, you know, indiscretions and fallen Catholics. You know, I wasn't fallen, I was pushed. And the abuse and the cover-up of the abuse that happened in, you know, in my diocese, which was L.A., seems to be, you know, something that's never truly been addressed. And the idea that law enforcement, you know, Schwarzenegger tried that and was shot down by the statute of limitations. But I feel that, you know, this conversation really is not realistic. It's more about, you know, the aftermath and how it really wasn't all that bad. So just wanted to make that comment.
Well, I'm glad you made the comment, but I disagree. I think sexual abuse can never be tempered or can never be in any way lessened or diminished. And if that came across in this conversation, I would certainly apologize. Certainly not my sentiments. And I think I can't speak for our guests, but I presume the same. Let me thank you for the call. Let me get another caller on here, and that's Sasha. Good morning. This is very serious stuff we're talking about. Sasha, go ahead.
Hi there. I had a question about why the parishioners go to the priests rather than to the police and the culture surrounding that, and are there any attempts to re-educate parishioners to go directly to the police rather than to the church?
You get any of that, Chloe Veltman? Thank you for the call.
Well, I mean, my impression from the reporting I've done is that a lot of people do feel more comfortable going to the church. It's what they know. And also there's a great deal of doubt, and there's a great deal of shame. And there's no, even though, you know, the church may have a directive that people that needs to, that, you know, they need to report these cases to law enforcement, perhaps that's not made clear to the parishioners. Perhaps there are cases where they are more clearly told, you know, if there's something you're feeling in terms of what's happened to you, come and talk to us first, you know. So I think there's a lot of that going on.
And again, it may not need repeating, but sexual abuse needs to be taken very seriously, especially when we're talking about minors and people who are given a great deal of trust and faith. Let me thank our guest, Chloe Veltman, reporter for KQED News. Thanks for being with us, Chloe.
You're welcome, Michael.
And thank you, Kimberly Winston, freelance religion reporter who's contributed to the Washington Post and USA Today. Thanks, Kimberly. Good to have you.
Thank you.
And thank you, our listeners. We are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. We have another hour of forum up ahead. We're going to explore the Delta tunnels and Governor Newsom's new position on that. It's going to be one instead of two. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of the Minetti Schremm Museum of Art at UC Davis. On view through April 14th, Blue and Yellow Corridor, an iconic work by Bruce Nauman, realized on the very grounds where the artist conceived it.